This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Michael K. is on the radio today, and he ain't afraid to say. On 98.7 ESPN Radio.
This is Eli Manning, and the Michael K. Show starts now on 98.7 ESPN.
And a good afternoon, Eli, and a good afternoon to all of you as well. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Tuesday. It's December 8th. It's 2020. Don LaGreca, Michael K., and Peter Rosenberg are all apart, but we're together for the next 4 hours. The other 20, certainly your responsibility. The Washington football team with a huge win following the Giants' huge win. So those two teams are not at the top, the NFC least, and we might have to take the L out of that soon because those two teams are hot. The Giants have won 4 in a row. The Redskins have won 3 in a row. And the Giants, with the win against the Seahawks, thought that they'd get a little breathing room. But Washington surprises everybody and gets a win against the Steelers. But did not surprise Peter Rosenberg, who took them and had a six-point week. Now, we mentioned during the soft open that Peter right now is at a city MD in the greatest city in the world waiting to get an antibody test. And he's reporting live right now, Don, that city MD. Peter, how's it going?
Well, it's going great. I'm waiting for my name to get called. I should be next year. And I just wanted to say in regards to the week of picks and the Washington game loss, like, RJ, can you play my song?
Well, the rearview mirror has now become very close to our cars.
Very close. It's a five point contest. Don said it early. They're streaks. It's all streaks, right? And now yeah. I put something together this week. I did not think we would play that well in the second half yesterday. I'll tell you one thing. Ron Rivera had me wanting to lose my mind when he went for it on fourth down from our own 35. But I'll tell you what. And Don, Michael, I don't feel the same way. Even though he makes the dumb riverboat decisions, he also does clearly coach in a way that makes the team believe in themselves, too.
Well, that's true, but imagine how pretty he'd be sitting if he actually did believe in them and went for that extra point against the Giants and won into overtime. Right. I mean, you wouldn't be thinking the Giants would have a chance now.
Yeah, it would be a much better spot. I mean, they basically have to win out at this point.
Yeah,
and they could.
And, well, because right now, here's the deal. All right, Michael mentioned in the soft open, maybe we have to take the L out of the East, because whoever wins this division, I think, is going to earn it. All right, I guess there's still the possibility that both teams go 1-3 or 0-4, and then the Giants win by default. But right now, the way these two teams are playing, 8-8's on the table. Mike Tannenbaum thinks that maybe the Giants can run the table. But after you win in Pittsburgh, after you win in Seattle, you look at the rest of the schedule and you say, well, why not? And if 9-7 wins this division, guys, we can no longer say what a joke it is, because the Giants went 9-7 in 2011 and went on to win a Super Bowl. So I'm not saying that either of these teams are winning a Super Bowl, but if they go 3-1, 4-0, where the Giants end up winning like on an 8-game winning streak to go into the playoffs, or the Redskins go on a clip where they finish with 9 wins and sneak in, how are they not one of the hottest, if not the hottest teams going into the playoffs and could be a legit tough out? Either of these two teams.
I love Mike Tannenbaum, but I don't think the Giants are going to run the table. I don't think the Redskins are going to run the table. So I think at best maybe they'll be 8-8, maybe. But we'll see. But they both play very well. And when you just look at the second half of the season, they'd be two of the hotter teams for sure. Peter, you have to feel pretty proud, because we were just talking on FaceTime, and you got yourself a Washington football team beanie. You're looking good sitting there in the WebMD, and I can't wait for the antibody test.
I'm very excited for the antibody test. Hopefully I get it here, because I was frigid being outside for a couple hours here in Manhattan. And I look forward to getting on TV. I was considering wearing something special on the air today, given the the results yesterday. And Michael, I did have one thought about you last night, and I don't want to rehash the same fight that you and Dom have had 200 or 300 times. But did you see the play from Chase Young when he stopped the Steelers at the goal line on 4th and 1?
Yeah, I did.
And I just kept thinking, man, the Giants must have really liked that win against Washington last year. Because I'll tell you what, Chase Young is a gamer.
I loved
it.
Because,
how about that, Don?
No, because, well, again, we get so... Because we're going to fight again. Thank you, Peter. Because what we're starting to see here, all right, I understand that talent wins out. Everybody wants talent. You know, the Jets are going through that now. We got to tank 0-16, get Trevor Lawrence. I think you will both agree that if they don't get somebody to coach up Trevor Lawrence, that pick is going to be a waste. Because I don't care how good Trevor Lawrence is, he probably is not going to be able to outplay bad coaching. If Adam Gase is his coach, Trevor Lawrence is going to become nothing. At least with that said organization that drafts him. So, yes, would Chase Young look great on this Giants team the way they're playing right now? But it's about coaching and it's about winning and kind of changing culture. And we can get gather all the talent you want. But what you see from this Giants team is it's more about coaching guys up. So if I've got the coach, if I've got the culture, then the players are going to come together. You know, Lawrence Taylor was a singular talent. He helped the Giants win 2 Super Bowls. But Bill Parcells was way more important than Lawrence Taylor. Because if you don't have Lawrence Taylor and you have Ray Perkins, you go to the playoffs and get bounced in the first round every year.
Yeah, but thank you, Peter. You started this argument. My point is that you said it was good for them moving forward. Well, they started the season 1-7, and last year's coach got fired. So I'm not saying they should have lost a game, but it would have been better for them to win the game.
Because
if you have a great coaching staff that coaches people up, then a great player like Lawrence Taylor becomes legendary, and a potentially great player like Chase Young becomes legendary. Instead, you don't have him, and you're going to regret not having him for the next decade for a stupid win that meant nothing.
I don't know. We'll see. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of players that you would wish you had, but, you know, if the Giants are playing well and competing for a championship and Washington's finishing 8-8 every year, I mean, that's going to get lost in the shuffle. The idea is, at that particular moment, was I rooting for the Giants to win? I was. And you could sit there and play the reindeer games of let's lose so we get the better draft pick. I mean, it wasn't 5 minutes ago that we were hearing from actual legit people in the industry and Giant fans saying, I don't want to win this division, finish 4-12, get a better draft pick.
Not
so
on this show.
Everybody gets consumed with getting the better players, when if you draft well and if you have a good coach and you coach the players that you have up, then you're not going to sit there and regret and go, oh boy, I wish I had Chase Young. If the Giants end up what you believe, that they've got a Hall of Fame head coach in Joe Judge, and they start competing for championships every year, are we going to continue to revisit this conversation on, oh boy, I wish they had Chase Young, or is it going to be just forgotten about because they got everything else right? So I don't worry about that stuff.
I'll be there.
Oh, you going in?
He's going in.
I'm going in right now.
All right, good luck.
That's good news overall.
Good luck. That's Peter Rosenberg, who's at a WebMD right now to get an antibody test because he wants to be able to go to his parents' house for the holidays. And they want to make sure that he has, they don't even like him in the first place, so they want to make sure that he's disease-free.
Oh, this is so exciting.
So he will join us as soon as he scampers back from WebMD. It's funny. Now you're looking at the Giants and the Washington football team, Don. And I think that this is going to this you might even disagree with this, and I didn't even bring this up during the pre-show meeting. But who would you rather have leading you down the stretch? Alex Smith or Daniel Jones? And I'm sorry, I'd rather have Alex Smith, who's been there and done that and has been in playoff situations and knows what he's doing. I think that on the long haul, obviously you want Daniel Jones. He can do more things. Alex Smith is an inspiration for that team. Alex Smith knows how to play the position. Alex Smith has a grittiness and a toughness that you cannot reproduce. And I think that the Redskins have rallied around him. I don't think the football team makes this run with Dwayne Haskins or the other quarterback whose name is escaping me right now.
Yeah, Allen.
Allen. So I think that Alex Smith is probably better suited for this run right now than Daniel Jones. I don't even know if Daniel Jones is going to play this weekend. It still might be Colt McCoy. But Alex Smith is a veteran who has seen it all, who's done it all, who's played for several different coaches, who's seen every blitz, who's seen every single defense you could throw at him, and has handled the greatest pressure that you could have, the possibility of his leg being amputated, the possibility of his life ending because of the injury. Bottom line, Don, I think he's well-suited for this run, probably a little bit better than Daniel Jones.
Well, listen, he's a veteran. You go back to that championship game in January of 2012 when he and Eli went at it for the right to go to the Super Bowl, and the game ended in overtime, and both quarterbacks were beat up in that game. And it wasn't Alex Smith's fault they lost that game. A couple of turnovers on special teams were the reason that San Francisco ended up losing that game. But that was a decade ago. And I'm with you that he has overcome a lot and he's smart. But when I watch him play, Michael, I feel like he's a hit away from being over.
Yeah, I mean, probably is.
And that's the thing that would scare me, because you're probably right. Listen, he's been through playing a big game, you know, playing in Pittsburgh, trying to win a game to keep his team alive is nothing compared to what he was going through a year ago when literally his life was on the line. So this is reindeer games to him. So from a pressure standpoint, no issue. He's been there. He's done that. He's played in big games before. So, yeah, and Daniel Jones never has. I mean, Daniel Jones has never piloted a team that's even been remotely a winner. You know, so his next big game is going to be the next game Daniel Jones plays. For Alex Smith, he's been there. But the reason I probably take Jones is just the fact that I just feel like watching Alex Smith play, and he takes his shots. He took a shot yesterday, too.
Yeah, toward the end of the game.
Even earlier in the game, when we were on the air, I remember he took a shot on a blitz, is that you feel like the next hit, it all could be over. And that's what's scary. And he's not elusive anymore because of the leg. And, you know, it's really scary. So can he hold up here for what it's going to take for the next 4 weeks and then into the playoffs? For a guy that, let's face it, Michael, when he first came in that week before the Giant game, was it against the Rams, where you were like, I was afraid for his life.
Yep.
You know? And he's gotten better, but that's the only difference. I agree with everything that you're saying. It's that the probably reason I take Jones, even with his compromised hamstring, is that, honestly, this all could be over in 5 seconds for Alex.
Now, when you look at both of these teams as well, you have to give tremendous credit for both coaches who took over moribund franchises and have instilled a winning spirit in them. And although both teams are just 5-7, I would say that the team that wins that division, and I'm still not counting out the other teams. I'm not. I mean, we'll hear from Mike Tannenbaum in a moment, but Don, I think one of those two coaches is the coach of the year. You could say Brian Flores has done a great job. I get it. He'd be in the running. But Brian Flores started the turnaround last year, and his team was supposed to be a little bit better. These teams, I mean, the Giants were 1-7 at some point.
Yeah.
And now they're 5-7. I think there's a legitimate case to be made for Joe Judge being the coach of the year.
Yeah.
I mean, who else would you pick?
You know, Rivera's had three different quarterbacks during this run, you know, so he would have to be considered. Another one, and Tannenbaum brought this up in DCR earlier, and people might scoff at it when they hear it, but Bill Belichick's name's got to be on the table too, right?
Absolutely.
He lost the greatest quarterback in the history of football, and his team's around 500, but there's a chance they can finish above 500, maybe sneak into the playoffs. So I think that's certainly a name that has to get considered. And I get to vote for this in the NHL, and I get caught up in it too. We always end up going with the coach that had the least expectations. But is that really fair? Like, why is Andy Reid's name taken out? He's got the greatest quarterback in football, but, you know, Andy Reid's not responsible for that. Why, no. Just because his team is good and coming off a Super Bowl, he shouldn't be considered?
Well, didn't we see that in baseball? Joe Torre didn't win every year.
Right.
Because everybody said, well, they're supposed to win.
But we always just strategically remove the best teams because right. We look at them, well, they're the best teams. They were expected to compete, but Andy Reid's still a heck of a coach, right? And what's happening with the LaFleur in Green Bay? You know, Green Bay's really doing it with Aaron Rodgers, and that's why I think he's got the legit shot at the MVP. But, you know, honestly, that's a team where you just say to yourself, how is that team still one of the best in football? And look what Sean Payton has done in New Orleans, having to play what might end up being 4 or 5 games without Drew Brees. And they may win the division. So there's a lot of coaches for consideration, but certainly the two in the NFC East, I would think, would get serious consideration with Judge and with Rivera.
Now, Don mentioned this. Mike Tannenbaum was on DCR today. And here's Mike saying the Giants are going to win the NFC East.
I think it's the Giants, and you know, not to. I think they run the table. I think they finish 9-7.
What?
Arizona at home, very winnable game. Cleveland at home, I think Cleveland is a great matchup for the Giants, because when you take away the run game against Baker Mayfield, Baker Mayfield had 4 touchdown passes and played well the other day against Tennessee, but those were all set up based on play action, and Kevin Stefanski did a great job. And then, look, there's no doubt that they could go beat the Ravens. You know, the Ravens are not the same this year. And then they got Dallas at home, and that's obviously a very winnable game. So, you know, 3 of the last 4 at home. Baltimore on the road won't be easy, but I think this team wins at least 8 games, and I don't think that's out of reach right now.
I don't think it's out of reach either. I think 9 is pushing it a bit. And you know, I'm glad that he mentioned the Browns, Don, because you have to also consider Kevin Stefanski.
Yeah, sure.
For coach of the year after what he took over, and he's turned around a culture as well. I mean, that team has 9 wins, so they're short of having a winning season, which is very, very rare in Cleveland. So is Judge going to win it? Is Rivera going to win it? Flores, Stefanski. But the fact that they're in the conversation tells you what a good job they did. Now, to flip the script on yesterday's game, I've never, ever believed that the Steelers had a chance to go undefeated.
No.
I think they're a good team. I don't look at them as a special, all-time great team. I just don't. Now, I also think, Don, that they've been victimized. They're going to be a team that does not have a bye week. Mm-hmm. They've been victimized by all the schedule changes, by the short turnaround. But there's still no excuse to play the way they played in the second half. I think that there is some amount of a flaw in that team. I don't think they had any chance of going 16-0, but, man, they certainly came close.
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, because they play so many close games, I knew they weren't going to go undefeated. But to lose to a team with a losing record in their own building,
not good.
With a 14-0 lead and a 14-3 at the half, I believe, if I saw the stat correctly, Michael, and I think it's probably since the merger, you know, it has to be, because when they were talking about record, because prior to the merger, you're talking about, you know, 12 games, you know, seasons.
Or 14, right, yeah.
That a team was 11-0. That lost a home game when leading by 10 points. Like the Redskins did this, or the Washington football team, they're the first team ever to do that, to overcome a 10-point deficit on the road against a team that was undefeated through 11 weeks. Like, that's historic. But, yeah, I'm not downplaying what Washington did, because it was incredible. And probably more impressive than maybe what the Giants did, considering that we're talking about an undefeated team and one of the best teams in football, and could still end up being the one seed when it's all said and done, Michael, because the Chiefs' loss came in conference.
Right.
It's a non-conference loss for Pittsburgh.
Right.
So we could be talking about the team that's the one seed in the AFC. So
I could see them losing another game.
But they have an old quarterback. You're telling me that Roethlisberger couldn't need a bye? You know, so as this season wears on, and then the weather gets colder and the games begin to pile up, that's going to hurt Roethlisberger. You know, if you're some of these younger, you know, Josh Allen's not gonna bother him if he was going through it.
What a performance by him, by the way.
Oh yeah, that's absolutely true. That was impressive. After, you know, spotting them, you know, the real bad turnover at their own goal line and handing them 7 points early, I thought that was a good win. But a young quarterback like Pat Mahomes wouldn't be affected by this. But Roethlisberger, who's like 37, 38 years old, no bye, weather's getting colder. That's a team that I think can get picked off here. I think they will lose again, and that's a team that maybe can have an early exit because of that.
And it's funny, because they don't want to lose, because they need that bye, because only the one seed gets a bye. This is a year where there's an extra playoff team, so the first and second seeds don't get the bye, just the first seed. So they desperately want to outlast Kansas City to get the bye, because this is a team that hasn't had a bye with all the postponements. Mm-hmm. The Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Now, we don't talk college football that much, but a significant development today that Michigan, because of more COVID-19 positives, has been forced to postpone its game, cancel its game this Saturday against Ohio State. Now, the reason that that's significant, that when the Big Ten started its season again after saying they weren't going to play, they had a rule. And the rule was that each team had to play at least 6 games in order to play in the Big Ten championship. Ohio State is 5-0. Now, they're one of the best teams in the country, And, you know, I'm watching SportsCenter, and there's all this, you know, angst over, gee, are they going to be left out? No, they're not going to be left out. There's so many things that they could do. They just rewrite the rule, number one. Number two, they'll find a team that will play them this Saturday. Do you know that the Big Ten Championship is, I believe, on December 19th?
Mm-hmm.
And the day of the Big Ten Championship, Don, all the other teams in the Big Ten are also playing. Just not playing in the Big Ten Championship. So take one of those teams and have them play Ohio State, and boom, you've got your sixth game. And even if they never find a sixth game for them, Don, you know what? They'll rejigger the rule because Ohio State not in the Big Ten Championship game, being 5-0 and being the best team in that conference, of course they're going to let them in.
And also, listen, you got to play it out. But how unfair would that be to Ohio State? Plus, they're playing Michigan. Let me bring in Andrew if he's got a second. Now, I've watched more college football than I ever have because there's no hockey. All right? So I've watched a lot of Michigan. I think the Buckeyes would be at least a 2-touchdown favorite in that game.
Might be more.
At least.
I mean, Michigan's terrible this year.
They're going to beat Michigan. So to keep them out because they don't play Michigan, they would beat Michigan. I understand you have to play it out, but under these circumstances, how unfair would it be if they don't get a chance because
now,
they didn't
for them
play enough games?
To go to the college playoff series, you know, I was listening to Paul Feinbaum, and he was saying, well, usually they will choose the college playoff participants by what they did in their conference championship game. So it might be held against Ohio State if, in fact, they don't play in that conference championship game. Again, this is a rule that was made up at the last second, and now because of extenuating circumstances, everything is fluid this year in sports. Remember, the baseball season started, and what, a game or two in, Don, they go, oh, by the way, there's going to be more playoff teams. So things could change easily. Nobody's going to hold them up against the wall and say, you can't do this. It's not a long-held rule. It's not a rule that's been there 100 years. It's been there about 2 months, and it's easy to change.
It's not institutional. And we've been able to – we've really fought, Michael, that all these – basketball, hockey, baseball, MLS, all these championships that are going to be won during the pandemic, we acknowledge there should not be an asterisk. And if there is an asterisk, it should be able to show – how the adversity and the difficulty playing during the pandemic was. So these are legit championships. But if there's a scenario in which Ohio State doesn't get a chance to go to a playoff, then I'm sorry, that whoever wins the championship, that's going to be compromised in my mind. That is clearly going to be compromised. And do you want that? Wouldn't you rather rejigger a rule that's 2 minutes old than to have whoever wins the national championship feel like they didn't deserve it? Because they didn't get to play the best team?
Don, it wasn't that long ago when the Big Ten said there was not going to be college football. And the one team that was an irritant and a constant pusher of having the season was Ohio State. Now, all of a sudden, Ohio State's going to be the team that's left out? Come on.
No.
Stop with the you and cry. I mean, it's going to get done. Any fan of Ohio State, believe me, they will play in the Big Ten Championship.
Right, and that one game being against the team. Now, normally that's a huge rivalry and everything else, and I'm sure that would factor into the spread. But Ohio State's not losing that game if they have to win it. Michigan is terrible this year. Terrible. I mean, I watched almost that whole game against Rutgers. And no offense to Rutgers, but they're a rebuilding program, and Michigan had to go to overtime to beat them. Michigan's not, that is not your dad's, that's not the Michigan State team from when Harbaugh first got there. Harbaugh might lose his job after this is all over.
Gundling said the spread that he saw had Ohio State favored by 28.
28? Think about that. Yeah. So you're going to hold them out of a playoff because they didn't play a game against a team that they are a 4-touchdown favorite against.
And you know what? Last minute schedulings can happen. Didn't it happen with BYU and Liberty the last weekend, and it turned out to be a really good game. So
was that the Coastal Carolina?
Coastal Carolina, yeah. That's it. Yeah. So you can say, pick up a phone right now. Hey, we need a game. Okay. That's the season.
Listen, I'm a big rule follower. I know you are because you're Narcomania.
Love it.
But during the pandemic, you've got to be able to be fluid, especially since they're so hell-bent on finishing this season, right? This is going to be, you're going to do all that. Think about all the work that you put in to at least have a shot at an actual season. And you're going to compromise it all by telling Ohio State, because you didn't play six games, you can't participate? No way.
I agree. No way. So we covered it. That's the deal. It's significant because, it, you know, it affects the national championship. But I don't think it's anything. I think it's all a big nothing burger. There will be Ohio State will play a game this Saturday. And if for some reason they don't, you know what? They'll be in the Big Ten championship game because they'll say, oh, there was a codicil. Believe me. Don't worry. 1-800-919-3776. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about today.
A lot.
A lot of hot stove stuff percolating that I'm hearing. Jeff Passan, second best guest in the history of the show,
first,
will join us at 5. Keyshawn at 5:30. So a lot of stuff. We're waiting on Peter as he comes back from his COVID antibody test. He'll be joining us any moment now. So stick around. It's going to be great. Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg remotely, and you right here on Yes in 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, this is important. We have breaking news. Breaking news. Yeah, Peter Rosenberg back, and as Greeny would say, better than ever. With a little Band-Aid on his arm after getting the COVID antibody test. Peter, welcome back.
Thank you so much for that welcome. I unfortunately have some troubling news.
No.
There is no Band-Aid on the arm.
Why?
I was informed that I cannot just go request an antibody test.
What? At least at 2 hours waiting in the cold.
That's right. And I expressed that I wish they had said that there were rules around the antibody testing. But the bottom line is, it was not a good sign because instead of just like the nurse practitioner coming in the room, after I said I wanted the antibody test, they sent the doctor in the room. And the doctor comes in and he's like, yeah, we can't offer that to you. There's no proof. There's no real scientific proof around what the antibodies do. So we can't just do that on in and of itself.
Is that right?
And wow.
So that's what they call wasting 2 hours.
So then they're like, well, do you want the rapid test? And I'm like, well, yeah, I'm already late for work, was in the cold for 2 hours. I'll take the rapid test. And I had an attitude. And then I apologized for the attitude. And then I
My urgent care doctor's a quack.
So what did the rapid test say?
I should find out in a few minutes, but this is just the
so
worst.
So between you and I, Peter, a lot of wasted time. I never got any information. You didn't get what you were looking for.
I understand.
I had seepage. You had wastage.
Yeah, you had serious seepage. And I said, I understand they're dealing with a lot, and I'm very grateful and said this to them for their work. But it is frustrating for us as consumers. We don't understand what the new rules are. And, yeah, I know there's no set thing about antibodies meaning anything. But for whatever reason, my parents are more comfortable, and they were more comfortable knowing that I had antibodies, whether it's fool's gold or not. And now they're just like, hey, we don't know there's any proof in that. And I was like, but you don't have proof it doesn't do anything, right? And he said, no, we don't have proof it doesn't do anything. And I was like, well, then that's why I would like it. But they wouldn't do it.
Do you ever get a sense, though, that maybe Mike and Mindy don't even want you there for the holidays and they're just making stuff up?
You know, it crosses my mind.
Yeah.
It, here and there. And that's why I know that offer is always on the table for me to come to your house.
No. This is hermetically sealed to vaccines.
Oh.
Yeah. You got no chance. You can sit outside and we'll feed you through the window.
Is it true that you're getting on a private jet this week to go to England?
I'm going to fly to England. I'm going to fly to the UK to get myself the COVID test, the COVID vaccine. Yeah,
I heard Woody Johnson's taking care of you.
Yeah, I'm out. All right, so this whole ordeal would have been quite frustrating for you if not for your WFT performing the way they did yesterday. You've got to be just on top of the world. You've closed in on the two of us. Only 5 points separate the three of us. In our big battle, you had a 6-point week. Although I remember Don, now back me up on this. He did say before he made the picks, "Don't pick any of my games."
I
have no idea what I'm doing this week.
Nobody had any confidence. But quickly, Peter, before you answer Michael's question, he did this at the beginning of the show when you weren't there, just to show you how he doesn't get it from a fan perspective. Mm-hmm. You didn't even think about 3-0. You're just concerned about your football team winning and have a chance to win this division. That's number one. The lead is not that you're 3-0 and you gain ground.
No.
The lead is the Washington Football Club is alive and well.
That's correct.
Thank you.
I last night...
It's not the Washington Football Club.
I like
it's
that
a team. Okay?
I like
it's
club.
Not WFC.
I like club or team, but last night was the happiest I've been about a football game in several years. I actually took Bear out, and Ballard had texted me, and I was in such a good mood that rather than text Ballard back, you know what I did?
You went to his place.
Oh, yeah, drop by. I did a drop by to
his
new place.
Which is really dangerous in this day and age, and that's why your parents don't want you.
Well, no, Ballard's already in my bubble. I saw Ballard 2 weeks ago.
Who's in Ballard's bubble?
His girlfriend, Katie.
Mm. And you trust Katie?
I do, because Katie is being mindful. I know that
for a
fact.
Does Katie bar the door if anybody comes to her house?
I do not know. I can't speak to that. But I dropped by Ballard's place and had a beverage and celebrated. You know,
This is after the game?
Yeah. Well, it was over early. It was over at 8:45.
Oh, Michael, since you don't know, you're so disconnected. When your team wins a big game, You find yourself reaching out to people you hadn't talked to in a while.
Mm-hmm.
You find yourself watching the NFL Network and
just
sitting through all of the highlights just to get to the highlight of your game. Obviously, Peter got it quicker than I did because there was only one game. There was only two games yesterday. But all of a sudden, your love of the sport blossoms. Things smell different. They taste different. It's just a different world.
It was
as they were running down the clock, though. Peter, close mm-hmm. off.
Close, but I was on FaceTime with a couple of friends, so no, I kept the clothes on. But I will say, I was so scared when we had to give the ball back, knowing that they would get the ball back again. And I'll tell you this about old Riverboat Ron. Not exactly too daring an offensive selection those last couple of drives. For Washington, when I was hoping we'd pick up another first down to end the game, they basically just, what did we pick up, 6 inches before punting back? The turnover when Montez Sweat deflected that ball and Bostic got the pick. Oh, we hadn't beaten Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh since 91. My last big memory of playing Pittsburgh was right before Election Day, I think in 2016 or 2012. Do you remember that, Don, when the stadium FedEx Field was all Steelers fans on Monday Night Football?
Yeah, I remember that.
It was the night before the election, and
McGovern,
we just got...
Democrat for the people.
We got completely wiped by them. So to go there and be missing Antonio Gibson, and also, how fun is it in football when you learn that you have a player you didn't know you had? This kid, Cam Sims, looks like a legitimate second receiver to McLaurin.
And while you were getting rebuffed for the antibody test, I said on the show that of the two quarterbacks, and no disrespect meant whatsoever to Daniel Jones, I'd rather have Alex Smith down the stretch because he's seen it, done it, nothing's going to scare him. He's been in playoff games. He's literally faced death, faced amputation, and this guy has no fear out there and can play quarterback. So of the two quarterbacks, I think he's more suited for this run. And as Don so aptly said, the next big game that Daniel Jones plays will be his first one.
Wow, Don. You know what, Don? That's why. That's why.
The exact quote, the next game he plays will be his biggest game.
It will be the most meaningful game by far that he's ever played.
Right.
By far.
And listen, and this is reindeer games for Alex Smith compared to what he's gone through in his life. My retort to Michael, though, was, and I'm sure you experienced this as a fan, you're holding your breath every time he gets hit.
But the only thing that's in danger is the leg. Nothing else is in danger, and it seems like it's holding up. I mean, I don't think they would have put him out there if he's...
No.
I think we're just imagining this guy almost died. Why is he out there? He's out there because he's able to be out there.
No, I'm not saying it from a standpoint of I'm worried about his life. I'm just, I think that he is someone, even yesterday, he got spiked where blood's pouring out of his leg.
That was a weird optic. That wasn't what you want.
No,
you know what he did? You know what he did when he went to the sideline? Somebody told me he was on the sideline for the team. He called up Curt Schilling and said, "Hold my beer."
Yeah, because
this is a bloody sock.
Oh my God! It was. Well, how does that happen? By the way, they don't wear metal spikes.
You could still get ripped with the spikes. I mean, the spikes
But I mean, he was
penetrate. It penetrates dirt and grass.
But there was a moment early in the game. You guys might have seen it. They showed a couple replays where he scrambled a bit and he got absolutely popped and slammed to the turf. And when I saw him walking off the field after that and seeing that he wasn't shaken up at all, it's what Steve Young told us a few weeks ago. We think about these things and have fear. They don't. He's just out there playing.
You can't. Like a guy that's at the plate facing 102-mile-an-hour fastball can't think about getting hit in the head. Otherwise, you can't hit.
Yeah, we would not be able to stand there. We'd be turning away. You know, they're built differently. And listen, obviously, quarterback-wise, you'd much rather be the New York Giants. I mean, from a future standpoint.
Yeah, but not this year.
But this year in this moment, I see what Michael's saying. Alex is playing. He's playing solid football. Is there a word yet, though, on if Gibson's okay? Because that would be really problematic for them.
Haven't heard. But when we come back, something on social media really got my attention yesterday. Something that somebody tweeted at us and on the show. And I actually wrote it down. Because I wanted to ask Peter what it means and if he did anything wrong.
Okay.
All right? This has been on my mind, and I do take it serious because I want us to do the show the right way without disrespecting any segment of our audience.
Wow.
And it is a bit of a flashback looking at the box score of the last time the Redskins beat the Steelers. Very nostalgic.
All right. We'll get nostalgic, and we'll ask Peter that question when we get back. Right here on the K-Show, you can consume us by asking your smart speaker to play ESPN New York. If, in fact, you have a degree from MIT, you can actually go to the website and find the tab and listen to ESPN, the ESPN app, and, of course, on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K-Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN. This is the Michael Kay Show.
Washington surprises everybody and gets a win against the Steelers, but did not surprise Peter Rosenberg, who took them and had a 6-point week. Peter, right now, is at a city MD in the greatest city in the world, waiting to get an antibody test, and he's reporting live. Peter, how's it going?
RJ, can you play my song?
This is the Michael Kay Show.
That's Peter Rosenberg, who's at a WebMD right now to get an antibody test because he wants to be able to go to his parents' house for the holidays. They don't even like him in the first place, so they want to make sure that he's disease-free.
Oh, this is so exciting.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Oh, yeah, what a big first hour. So much stuff packed into that hour. We're glad that you could spend it with us. And now, hour number two, the Michael Kay Show. On 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save, it's the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Some baseball stuff as we are in day two of the virtual winter meetings for baseball. The White Sox made a trade for Lance Lynn, who was in the final year of a 3-year deal. Texas Rangers traded him to the White Sox, so that's a $10 million contract. And the White Sox putting together a pretty nice rotation for Tony La Russa. Carlos Santana signs a 2-year, $17.5 million deal with the Kansas City Royals. He did not have a good year this year, but he did have a very good year in 2019. It's funny how people change the narrative for their purpose. So when somebody has a bad year, they say, well, you really can't read anything into the 60-game season. And when somebody has a great year like DJ LeMahieu, well, it was a great year. But you can't read anything into it if it was a bad year. You could read everything into it if it was a great year. So, again, if it fits your narrative, that's what you go with. Buster Olney was on with Chris Carlin last night on the Carlin Show, as we like to call it. And he said that he would bet his farm in Vermont that the Mets were going to sign George Springer. Here is Buster on Carlin saying the Mets were very close to landing the former Astros outfielder.
I think they're going to be aggressive. And that's based on the conversation with the agents. I'm just about ready to bet the family farm in Vermont that they're going to wind up with Springer. It just feels like such a natural fit. And he, of course, is one of the prime guys. He could play center field for at least a year. He'd help to balance out their lineup. You know, he might be in the $125 to $150 million range.
Now, he also talked about other potential Met free agent targets.
I have heard that Bauer is potentially a priority. I personally think Lindor is a great match for them. You know, Real Muto, we talked about during the summertime, but James McCann, the fact that they were pushing those talks last week, I don't think that was a surprise. I think that some of the Mets conversations internally have been, you know what, why don't we take the less expensive catcher and then spend the money elsewhere, you know, possibly on Springer, possibly on Bauer, maybe in taking on Lindor. And I will tell you that, you know, a lot of times teams in the last 20 years have been leery of taking on a guy who's going in his free agent year the way Lindor is. But agents are saying now that the best leverage for potential free agents is not to actually hit the open market, but the year before, the winter before they become a free agent, like Mookie Betts got to before he reached that huge deal that he made last summer with the Dodgers.
You know, the one thing that I would say, though, okay, they get accustomed to the situation, but it's still going to come down to dollars. Mookie Betts didn't give the Dodgers a discount because he got to experience them just for a little bit. He still signed a market rate contract. It gives you a little bit of a head start where you could talk with him and right. He could like the place, but you know, he could also not like the place, Don.
But you are when you make a trade for a free agent, I guess the benefit is that you get that chance to negotiate exclusively with that player, right? Before right. He hits the open market. So is that worth something to you? That you get that advantage. Otherwise, you are trading for someone that's going to help you in 2021 and no guarantee that he'll be there in 2022. But if this team, during the offseason, Michael, even if they settle for McCann behind the plate, get Springer, get Bauer, get Lindor, I mean, just how incredible would that be?
Oh,
the momentum, you'd go into the season as the favorite, probably in the National League acquiring those players. You'd blow the fan base away. Again, everything's a little dicey as far as whether fans are going to be in the building or whatever, but in normal circumstances, you're talking about close to sellouts every night. I mean, it would just be, it would have that kind of feel to it, Michael, that they would be the team. And what a tremendous step that you would take in that PR direction, if that's where you go. I mean, my God, that'd be a home run for Steve Cohen. I mean, he'd be leading everybody down the trail.
He sent out a tweet last night. He said, I have good news and bad news. What do you want to hear? And he said, okay, I'll say good news first. I lost 2 pounds. And then the bad news was, it's going slow, but be patient. So he's staying engaged with the fans. Now, Buster, continuing on Carlin, also talked with Chris about the perception that the Yankees will not be big spenders this offseason. Here's Buster.
The perception of other teams is that the Yankees are willing to spend on DJ LeMahieu, and beyond that, they may be saving their powder for other things that develop during the wintertime. In other words, if the prices drop on all these massive free agents, maybe they dive into that. You know, maybe they make a trade. You know, maybe at some point, as the Indians conversations about Lindor pop up, maybe that's the guy they're going for. But there is definitely a perception among the agents and other teams that the Yankees are, besides LeMahieu, are not necessarily being hyper-aggressive.
And that's what I told you yesterday on the show, late in the show. Their first, second, and third priority is LeMahieu. They will wait until the LeMahieu deal gets done. Either he signs with them or signs somewhere else before they make their next move. And if they get LeMahieu, which is probably going to cost about $20 million a year, I don't know how many years they'll go, but if they get LeMahieu, I don't think Tanaka's coming back. I know that Yankee fans don't want to hear that unless he gives them a tremendous hometown discount. I know that he loves pitching here. I know that LeMahieu loves playing here. But how much is that worth? So if another team blows them out of the water, like say the Yankees want to pay, I'm just making up a number now, $8 million for Tanaka, and somebody wants to give him $16 million, does he love it that much that he would take half the pay that another team's offering? And then there's that extra year, too, where the Yankees, the LeMahieu negotiation with the Yankees, to me, has a lot of the feel of the Cano negotiation, where, okay, we're going to pay you great money. This is the amount of years that we feel comfortable with. And if you get more years somewhere else, I don't think they're going to go over that. Yankees gave Cano 7 years at $25 million a year. Seattle gave him 10 years at $24 million a year. Yankees said so long. Now, I think the Yankees want LeMahieu more than they want at Cano. but they don't have that much more that they're going to do if, right. in fact, they get LeMahieu. I think you're going to see a lot of young pitchers from their organization in their rotation, Don.
Now, it doesn't matter because going out and getting the best players doesn't guarantee you a thing, right? The Mets can land all those players that you mentioned, McCann, Springer, Lindor, all right, and Bauer, and finish 500. I mean, that's just the way baseball is. I think it'd be hard-pressed that they would do that, but you never know. But can you imagine just the PR hit the Yankees would take if the new owner comes in, the Mets land all those players, and then the Yankees keep DJ LeMahieu, but it comes at the expense of losing Tanaka? And if you spend too much time with LeMahieu, like back in the old days, it'd be like, all right, we'll try to get LeMahieu done. If not, then we'll just trade for Lindor. Well, now with the Mets in town, Michael, if you spend so much bringing LeMahieu back, if for some reason it fell through, maybe you can't make the Lindor deal because the Mets already made it.
Right.
So they got to be careful. If you want to spend all the time convincing LeMahieu or figuring out what you want to do, you're going to have to get it done quickly. Otherwise, if for some reason he slips through your fingers, what's plan B?
Well, knowing Cashman and company, they're going to have plan B, C, and D. But I just don't know. I mean, the Tanaka thing might be, even if they don't get LeMahieu, they might not want to spend that capital on Tanaka, a pitcher that has a partially torn UCL. But they're going to have to get pitching if they don't get LeMahieu.
Oh, absolutely. And going with the kids, it might work. And again, I'm not going to sit here as like a Mets fan and go, oh, the Mets are going to win the World Series and the Yankees are going to finish under 500 because of this, because the Yankees are still exceptionally well run. And they may end up turning out to be a better team at the end of the day anyway because of these moves, because I think you should trust Brian Cashman. But I'm saying from a public relations standpoint, with Yankee fans feeling like the team's cheap to begin with, I mean, how would that look if they end up, you know, not getting who they want, talking about having a budget, and then Steve Cohen comes in and just, you know, takes everybody off the table?
Well, the one hit on LeMahieu would be, very rarely do they lose players that they want to keep, which always made me think they didn't really want Cano that much. They wanted him to an extent at their price.
And that's fair.
You know, I don't think there's a player that exists other than of recent vintage. I think they were getting Cole no matter what the price. They didn't want to go 9 years. No way they wanted to go 9 years. But when he said that would get it done, they went 9 years. So I don't think they want to go 5 years with LeMahieu. But if he says the fifth year will get it done, I personally, if the number is right, I would give him the fifth year. I mean, you made a trade for Giancarlo Stanton for 10 years.
Right.
So you can't give LeMahieu that fifth year? Giancarlo Stanton's going to be signed until he's 37 or 38. Now, what player translates better when he gets older, Stanton or LeMahieu? I think LeMahieu might.
Of course. Now, you don't want to give the fifth year, Michael, but do you want to take the chance and them not giving the fifth year, LeMahieu bolts, and then Lindor gets traded to the Mets, Springer's off the table?
I don't think you can worry about what the Mets do, Don. You've got to do what's right for you. I know what you're saying with the public relations hit, but they can't react to what the Mets do.
No, but I'm just talking about the reality of, in the old days, it would be we'll get somebody, because we'll always be a team that can outbid. And if we lose out on LeMahieu, we'll trade for Lindor, or we'll go and get this player or that player or whatever, and we'll appease the fan base that way. But because the Mets all of a sudden become a player, and maybe the only player because of the pandemic and the financial situation, that Lindor would be there pre-Cohen. Now he may not be.
You know, I said this on the Hot Stove show on Yes last night. And Dave Lennon wrote it about it in Newsday today. The fact that the DH situation in the National League is not settled as teams are trying to put their team together is an absolute black mark against baseball. That they would use the rules of the game as negotiating ploys to get other things. It's disgraceful. And the National League owners should be up in arms. You expect us to build a team not knowing whether or not there's going to be a DH. And if I'm Marcell Ozuna or Nelson Cruz and the like, I'm telling the Players Association, you get this done. I want 30 teams to choose from. I don't want just 15. Exactly. It's a joke. And from everything I've heard, the owners are trying to use the DH in the National League as a hedge to get more playoff teams. No, these are the rules of the game. You want to make the game great. Deal with that other stuff in other ways. This is ridiculous and small looking. It really is.
Especially when you know these National League owners want it. Why wouldn't you want it?
Forget
the
about
it. The Mets should be screaming about it. They have Dominic Smith and Alonso. DH works for them.
I don't want to, especially after what we went through last year. Can we stop with the whole, and I was the leader of this opinion not too long ago, where I like National League Baseball better. The managers have to do more. There's more strategy. But forget it. I got a runner at second base in extra innings. I'm playing seven-inning doubleheaders. I got a pitcher that has to face three batters. Come on. This extends careers. It adds offense. Nobody wants to see a pitcher who's on a 9-year contract making $1 billion get hit by a pitch and have his career come to an end. Or running the bases on a rainy day. Remember when Pettit turned his ankle in Houston back all those years ago?
That was Chin-Ming Wong. Ruined his career.
Seriously. So just, I understand it's a bargaining chip, but at the end of the day, you're hurting yourself. Just have the DH. Have the universal DH. Get your head out of the sand of the old day garbage, okay? Stop it already. I appreciated it for a time, but now it's over, okay?
And whether you like the DH or not, the fact that it's being held in abeyance until they could try to get more playoff teams out of the Players Association, the rules of baseball should not be negotiating ploys. It makes the sport look small and short-sighted.
And they're going to cave on that too, Michael. Because both sides benefit from extra playoff teams.
Give them the extra teams.
That's what I'm. But who's
isn't it better for the players too?
Who's fighting? I would think every. That's the point.
Because the players want to get something out of it. So rather than the owner saying, "Listen, we're going to give you the DH because we think it's important for the game," that's 15 high-paying jobs instead of tying it together to giving them extra playoff teams. These two sides have to stop fighting and get together and do what's best for the sport.
I got
to
tell you, the one thing that drives me crazy about owners and players in baseball more than any other sport, and I'm coming from a hockey perspective where they're always going at each other, right, is that it's almost like they enjoy the fight. Like they find reasons to pick and fight each other. Everybody benefits from the DH. Everybody benefits from expanding the playoff. So why would the players take the side of being against the postseason?
Because it's all negotiating.
But Michael, I'm saying at the end of the day, they benefit from more playoff teams, okay? Because that means they've got a better chance of making the playoffs. They can expand
to another
television contract that makes them more money.
You know what the players are afraid of? I've heard. Well, if we give them more playoff teams, then teams are going to be less apt to really improve their roster and spend money because they know they'll probably make the playoffs anyway. There's always an angle, Don.
But we're already in this financial Armageddon for the foreseeable future anyway.
They look so childish last year, and the fact that people are putting together teams and not knowing whether or not they have a DH is reprehensible.
That's a joke. But as you
said, they don't even know what the size of the rosters are going to be, and the Rule 5 draft is on Thursday. Think about that. They don't know who to protect. They don't know if they're going to have a 28-man roster, 26, 25, 20. They have no idea. Joke. Now, I want to run this past Peter because he's the guy. He's the arbiter of these things.
He is.
Okay.
So there's a video out. There's a guy in a deli. He's with his girlfriend, and he's wearing a Boston Red Sox cap.
I hope this is pre-pandemic, by the way.
No, I think it's recently.
That's a shame.
This is on social right now?
I believe it's on social right now. I just saw it
during the break. You can
all right.
It.
So
what am I looking at?
Well, let me explain it first.
Yeah, please.
All right, well, I want to see it too.
So the guy is wearing a Red Sox cap, proud Red Sox fan. Behind the two of them waiting to get his sandwich is Manny Ramirez, who's eminently recognizable to anybody who's even a quasi Red Sox fan. So Manny, having fun with the guy, says, "Who's your favorite Red Sox?" And the guy looks at him and doesn't even know it's Manny Ramirez. And he mumbles something about who his favorite Red Sox is. And Manny goes, "You sure that's your favorite Red Sox of all time?" And the guy had no clue. Now, to me, the sports police should barge into that deli, take the hat and burn it. You're not a Red Sox fan. You don't deserve to wear that hat. That would be if somebody's wearing a Yankee cap and they're at Citarella and Mattingly walks in and go, "Who's your favorite Yankee all time?" And the guy has no idea who Mattingly is. Again, the hat gets burned.
So real quick, I just watched it. Does the guy not even attempt to answer?
Yeah, it's like he's annoyed that somebody's asking him that and doesn't realize the guy asking him is one of the greatest players the Red Sox ever had. Now, whether or not he did it the right way, it's an argument for another show. But that's Manny Ramirez.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, that part's insignificant if you're a Red Sox fan. He's such
the hat has to go, am I right? He should never wear it again.
If you are a Boston Red Sox fan, I believe every key player from that team should be instantly recognizable.
I can't tell how old the guy. He looks like he's older. Like older meaning in his 20s.
Yeah, he's like 27, I'd say.
That's my guess, mid to late 20s.
Now, the scary thing about it, Peter, is that the last time Manny played for the Red Sox was 2008. So it was 12 years ago. So say if the guy is 26 years old, he was 14 the last time Manny played for the Red Sox.
But hold on.
It is possible that in 14 years old, he might have been a fan of another team. Who the heck knows?
But if he's 27, let's assume he's a Red Sox fan and he's 27 years old. 2004 was 16 years ago. He was 11. He was at the prime age to know exactly who Manny was.
I think he has to turn in the hat. That's just my take.
Well, I'll tell you what, Michael. It's funny. You said you think there should be like a fan police. I mean, it happened. He's getting grilled now by the entire world.
It's hard. I mean, how do you? I'm just trying to be that guy and just saying, well, maybe when he was 11 or 12 years old, he wasn't a fan of baseball and became a fan of baseball over the last decade.
I'm 59.
You'll be 53 on Saturday.
And the last year Joe DiMaggio played was 1951. If Joe DiMaggio rose from the dead and walked up to me in a deli, I think I'd know that was Joe DiMaggio.
But you know what's sad, Michael? And it sickens me, but I've learned to live with this. I would bet you'd be shocked. By the way, Manny still looks the same.
Look, like, exact same.
You can't even say that, he didn't turn into Sammy Sosa. He's still the same guy, right?
Yeah.
And that's a well-worn Red Sox cap, too. So they're showing it on Yes right now. It's been worn.
I don't know what the percentage would be, but I bet you'd be shocked how high the percentage would be of 27-year-old Yankee fans that may not recognize Don Mattingly.
Wait, but guys. Oh, well, that's fair, Don. But by the way, there is a caveat.
What's that?
He's in Australia.
Okay. He's got a Red Sox cap on.
But the definition of fan in Australia, he might just think it's cool to wear a Boston. Like, that's not quite the same. I might have to give a pass here.
He still has to turn in the hat, though.
Oh, that's fine. I mean, turn in the hat.
But here's my point, okay? He might be a diehard Red Sox fan from Australia who's been a fan for the last, like, 6 or 7 years and just doesn't know the history. Because, like I said, I bet you if you poll, like, if Don Mattingly came up to somebody that's 26 years old, who's a Yankee fan. I still think the majority of Yankee fans at 26 would recognize Don Mattingly, but you might be surprised how many don't. Because the one thing about a younger generation, they don't seem to really embrace the past that much. And again, I'm not painting a broad brush, Michael, but you know there's a lot of people that just don't think. We grew up, Michael, I had an intimate knowledge of the Brooklyn Dodgers growing up a Met fan because I was hungry for everything that happened in the past. But there's a lot of people, they live in the now. They don't care about the team from 10 years ago. They only care about the team now.
Now, Peter's wearing a beautiful red sweatshirt. Is that a wolf or bear on the front?
I wish it was bear. It's a wolf. It's an NWO wolf pack.
Right, so if a wolf came up to you, you'd recognize that's a wolf.
It's a great point. Actually, a guy saw me on the street today and just pointed at the sweatshirt and knew exactly what it was.
Now, on my TV, it's coming across more pink. Is that possible?
No. It's got a
pinkish red.
It's a pinkish red.
Maybe a light red. Let's go to Lewis in Queens.
Go ahead.
Lewis?
Hey, how are you guys?
Good. How are you?
I just got to say... Okay, and let me preface this with, Peter, I love you. I'm a fan of yours. Okay, I've been for years.
Don't like
but
where this
with
going.
Your take of John Lennon and going after Joe Judge, and now I can't turn on this show without hearing about a football team that doesn't have a name. I'm going to need you to go. He needs to be removed from the show.
Wait, wow. What was his Joe Judge opinion? What was his Joe Judge?
Before, when you guys were praising Joe Judge, as he should be praised, and he's trying to hold the break.
You know, I have him going to the Hall of Fame.
My team, the Giants, have not been good for a few years. Let us have this excitement, Peter. And he's been going after him all year. And then the John Lennon thing happened. And now, at the beginning of the show, we're talking about a team that doesn't even have a name.
No, that's not fair.
Yeah, that's not even reasonable.
Lewis, that's the open because it affects the Giants, the Redskins. That game affected the Giants.
Redskin
that's
open
the open.
If it didn't affect them. It affects
the
Giants.
Okay, that's fair. But, I mean, he's already had two strikes. He's got to go.
So how do you want him?
That's not how the three strikes goes.
Do you want him fired, Lewis? I mean, you want him fired?
I don't call for jobs, but...
But you are!
You
literally
started today.
No, you didn't just call for a job.
Just go back to Maryland and take the rest of the year off.
See, that's...
You said, I can't believe you just said I don't call for jobs. You literally picked up the phone and called for my job.
Now, Peter, can I say this one thing? He did not make any salient points.
Thank you, Michael.
The Lennon thing was unfortunate, but not fireable, because you held your own in the conversation. You're a big boy.
And as much as you may think I'm a fool, many people, I know I sound like a certain politician, many people agreed with me. That was not a fireable
offense. There's many people that were as lost as you. But
that may be so. But I'm not on an island.
Listen, and you're counteracting an argument of Michael Kay saying Joe Judge is going to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, okay? What am I supposed to do?
And he's coached in 12 games. So, come on.
They have a winning record.
And we had to open with the Washington football team. It ties in.
And everyone loves, by the way, everyone loves poking at us for not having a name. You have to understand, if you're someone like me who thinks the last name, the previous name had to go, it's a compliment they don't have a name. I'm thrilled.
It is embarrassing, but that's
hold on. It was embarrassing. Here's the thing. It was embarrassing in the same way that so many things about our society up until and still right now are embarrassing. But it had to get changed, and I'm proud that it did. I'm not upset. I'm not upset that we didn't force. We're the Washington Wildcats. I'm good. I don't need. So every day I get made fun of. Oh, the generics. Oh, the no names. So you made fun of us for having the racist name. Now you get make fun of us for having no names. How about this? We beat the best team in football last night on national TV. Shooter!
And you know what? This is going to come across tremendously insulting, Peter. And I don't mean it to be insulting to you. But it's just factual. All right? I don't really get a Giant fan hating Washington all that much. There's been very few times that you've been a problem for the Giants.
Well, I mean...
Yeah, you're like the redheaded stepchild.
The Eagles I despise because there's so many big spots the Eagles are beating the Giants. Cowboys, the same thing. I don't really have any problem with
you. Do you want to do your list, Don, or are you going to continue to eat into your time?
Wow.
I'm going to do my list.
A very rare special Daily Don coming up in just a moment. Right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everybody, it's me. I'm back. And guess what? It's another Don segment.
We're doing the list, Michael. I don't care if you don't like it.
The Daily Don.
I'll fight to the death for this list.
It's the Daily Don Show. He makes lists. Take it away, Donnie.
All right, gentlemen, this is ultra topical, and it's been all over today. The unfortunate passing of John Lennon happened 40 years ago today when he was gunned down outside the Dakota, and just an incredible tie into sports. It was announced during the Patriot Dolphin Monday Night Football game on December 8th, 1980. Just an unreal, surreal day in really the world. Where you talk about things that bring the country together, what brings the world together. The passing of John Lennon was universal, kind of where you knew where you were when it happened. So I figured what I would do, top five John Lennon songs outside the Beatles.
I'm going to have very little to offer here.
The man whose opinion was he was the front man has little to offer.
Yeah, I don't listen to John Lennon solo stuff. What am I, an animal? Let me go Imagine.
I don't know what allowed you to go first, but you jumped on it.
Michael's going to do better.
And it's a number one.
Imagine all the people.
I have songs that I like more by John Lennon than that, but you can't not have that number one.
Give Peace a Chance.
Is number three.
Good job.
As relevant today as it was the second it was written and released on July 4th of all days, 1969. By the way, Imagine was released on October 11th, 1971. So you got three, you've got one. 2, 4, and 5 still on the table, gentlemen.
By the way, do you guys know the irony that while we were having that fight the other day about Lennon versus McCartney?
Right.
I was in the process of placing the order for the 45 of Wonderful Christmas Time so I could get it in my jukebox this year.
Nice.
One of the great original Christmas songs of all time from Paul McCartney.
But in the conversation from John would be, Peter?
Another Christmas song.
All right. That's number four. Happy Christmas. War is over.
And so happy Christmas.
Wow. Forgot about
released
this.
Released December 1st, 1971.
That's not what Peter guessed.
No. But Don's just taking a segue opportunity there.
Oh. That's not what Peter guessed, Don.
I didn't even know the name of it.
We're trying to move along, Michael.
What? Yeah, Michael.
Up in the sky.
Oh, my God.
It's Captain Literal Man.
Okay. Michael, always keeping score. Michael, you won this one, okay? So don't worry. We stopped keeping score. You won.
Yeah, go ahead, Michael. You're up.
How about Instant Karma?
Instant Karma, Michael. Number five.
Instant Karma's going to get you. Going to look you right in the face.
Released February 6th.
I want to hear these songs.
1970, right?
I don't even know that.
You could be someone right now going, I'm not going to know any of these songs. And you know what? You know all of them. You know all of them.
No, I didn't know that one.
You didn't know that one?
No.
You didn't know Instant Karma?
No. I did not.
You're a music guy. Okay.
I don't feel bad. Andrew, you know Instant Karma?
I did, actually. I didn't know the name of it, but I definitely know that song.
Or maybe if I heard a little longer, maybe I would. It didn't hit me right there.
No, we don't want to pay the money. You
have more than 30 seconds.
30 seconds, you have to pay the money. We're cheap.
Yeah. I don't want to cripple the station dead here.
Sniff them. Is that the last one?
No.
The classic John Lennon song, Sniff 'em Dead?
Instant Karma, 5. Happy Christmas, War is Over, 4. Give Peace a Chance, 3. Imagine, 1. We still need number 2. And this is my personal favorite. I couldn't put it number 1 because Imagine has to be number 1. But this is my personal favorite.
Should I go, Peter?
Yes.
Whatever gets you through the night.
I do not have it.
Did you think about it?
I did not, because I was very comfortable with these 5.
How about Woman?
No. Who are you taking out?
How about Just Like Starting Over?
Who are you taking out? This really takes the fun out of it, Peter, when he's just like...
I think you should have just announced it, Don, when you gave the big setup of it's your number one. Right. I think you just announced it.
Do you know the story behind Starting Over? I mean, that became number one after he got killed.
Right.
It was on the album that was released, but the original title was Starting Over, which was a Dolly Parton song as well. And he liked Dolly Parton. He liked her music, and then he put the parentheses Just Like Starting Over.
Right.
Oh, wow, out of respect.
Yep.
That's dope. Certainly in the conversation, but here is, this is my personal favorite, but I have it at number 2.
Yeah, we're playing those mind games forever.
Released October 29th, 1973, Mind Games. Those are my top 5. Obviously, very subjective, open for debate, but that's top 5 John Lennon songs.
I got to get to ordering some 45s.
And there's a great, an interesting story. We as a company broke the John Lennon story because somebody that worked at ABC was in the emergency room after a motorcycle accident when John Lennon was brought into the hospital. So he was able to call into the newsroom. But Channel 7, ABC, was in the Patriot-Dolphin game. So with 3 seconds left and the Patriots lining up for the game-winning field goal, they call into the booth. And Howard Cosell argued that maybe they shouldn't announce it. The news was going to come up in 30 seconds anyway. I'm thinking that was probably his angle, because the one thing about Howard, Michael, he understood a story. He understood his top story. And this was way bigger than football. So I imagine his arguing whether he should do it or not was just, if you wait 30 seconds, the game will be over and they can break into the news. But Frank Gifford talked him into announcing it, and Howard announced on channel ABC that Lennon was dead on arrival.
Last couple of days, I've been reading all the stories about the day when the tragedy happened, and Mark David Chapman was in New York for a while. There's one of the last pictures ever taken of John Lennon was he was signing an album for this guy. And you see the guy off to the side. This was not when he shot him. He shot him a day later. Mm. The day he shot him, Mark David Chapman was walking around New York City, and he came upon James Taylor. And James Taylor was trying to get away from him. He said, this guy's really whacked out. And then he was staying outside the Dakota, and Lennon and Yoko Ono were recording an album, and they were hungry, and they were going to go out to eat. But Lennon had become such a dedicated dad to Sean, he said, well, let's go back and tuck Sean in. And then the driver that was driving them didn't, if you ever see the Dakota, you can go all the way in. But there are always fans outside the Dakota to see famous people. And John said, stop, so I can meet some fans. And that's, and this guy, Mark David Chapman, just stood there in a three-point, like a shooter stance, and fired four hollow-point bullets into him.
Mm. And according to the first report, because you could probably find it on the internet, people know Vince Scalzo. He's a long-time DJ in New York, and he was working at NEW at the time. And you can find it. I was listening to it on satellite radio today on Breakfast with the Beatles on Channel 18. Right after Jungleland, and everybody knows how Jungleland from Bruce Springsteen ends. It's a very emotional song. And then Vince Scalzo, like in tears, announces it. And the original report, Michael, said that when the police, because Chapman never ran, so the police grabbed him and put him into the cop car, and he was smirking. And he's still in prison.
Terrible. Terrible. I mean, I guess Lennon would be 80 now, right?
Yeah.
That's so weird.
But, you know, Paul's what, 78, 79?
Yeah. Who? Ringo's the oldest. I think he's 80 already. But that's definitely, I mean, obviously Peter's a little too young. He was a year old. But, like, you knew where you were when that happened.
When we get back, Odell Beckham Jr. has put the finger on the person that sabotaged his Giants career. Yeah, he's pointed that person out.
Nice.
We will find out who that is when we get back right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.